You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Fosma Moon, and Seth Miller. Well, how are you doing on this fine, we're recording this on Tuesday, this fine Tuesday, Seth? Is it a nice day in New York City?
It was a gorgeous day.
It's a gorgeous day here. It's like 75 out today, sunny.
It was cooler than that here, but we had mostly blue skies, a little patchy cloud work. Great day for flying.
And you were flying, and we'll talk about that.
I was flying.
We'll talk about that at the end of the show because you have some giveaways for our listeners.
Yes.
That's a teaser. Or you can
is that what that's called?
Or you can just skip ahead. I don't know. You know.
Or probably read the notes and some of our tweets, and you'll figure it out.
Exactly.
You're all smart people, except for the part where you listen to us, which we still haven't figured out.
Well,
one way or another.
You know what's crazy here is like I was down in Houston over the weekend, and it was like 80 down there, and the day I left here was like 80 in blue skies, and then come back and it's nice again, and then Thursday it goes back down to like the 50s and rainy.
So you're not actually done yet.
Nope, but still going. Winter is still here. We just getting a taste of summer. That's all. It's just like a little taste.
I felt your the sort of Portland rain pains last weekend or last Friday. We had some awesome like monsoonal biblical storms blow through Friday and flooding and such. That was exciting.
Oh, how many days?
If you haven't recently spent an hour outside in the cold pouring rain, clearing drains and desperately hoping that your apartment doesn't become a swimming pool, you're not really living.
Yeah. Oh man, that does not sound like fun actually.
No, it was very wet. It was very cold.
Yeah.
Fortunately, my apartment is not a swimming pool, so
good.
I got that win out of the deal.
Let's talk news. There's plenty to talk about.
Always do.
Yeah, I mean, there's some tweets going out today about some other stuff, but let's talk about route news on United. United has said that they will expand in the fall. They're flying from San Francisco, and so what that means is that they are going to increase some routes frequencies. And they're going to – I think they're going to add a route. Are they adding routes or is it just an increase?
I don't think this announcement is any new routes, but they're upgauging at 10 routes, 10 destinations, and they're adding additional service to 8. And one of them is an overlap. Kansas City actually is getting both, so that's exciting. But it's 17 different airports affected in one way or another, and so – the announcement's a little strange because it's like larger aircraft on daily service between San Francisco and these 10 cities. And then they list 10 cities, one of which is Fresno. And Fresno's getting a 737. I think it's the last flight in at night from San Francisco to Fresno, and the first flight out in the morning from Fresno back to San Francisco will be a 737 now. And putting aside some questions about how they're going to crew it, because the layover for the aircraft on the ground is like 6 hours, which is just the right amount of time that the same pilots definitely can't work the in and out.
Yeah.
Even with a sit and the cabin crew could with like a sick, like transfer to a hotel, take a 3 hour nap and come back, but that's a horrible work day. So it's anyway, but that's one of 5 daily frequencies, I think. And it's listed on this press release as larger aircraft, San Francisco to Fresno gets a 737. And so it's not all 737s. It's the one flight and the rest of them stay small. Also, I think you set a date at some point, but a lot of the upgauging starts in June 8th. And then a bunch of new routes are being added on June 8th as well. But those were previously announced.
Yeah. And so in August.
And then it rolls through. The upgauging sort of comes out around August.
Yeah. And then August, you get the frequencies go up.
Frequencies go up in August. Yeah.
So like San Francisco, Seattle is going from 9 to 10 daily. Albuquerque is going to 2 daily from 1. Baltimore is going to 2 daily from 1. Indianapolis, 2 daily from 1. Kansas City goes to 3 daily from 2. Nashville goes to 2 daily from 1. Philadelphia goes to 3. And Portland, Oregon here gets 9 daily. And the route,
it's interesting. I guess to me, part of obviously a lot of this is would certainly appears to be two things. There's Kirby, President Scott Kirby's comments about United President Scott Kirby. Let's be unclear there. talking about trying to get mainline back in business markets, where he felt that United gave up too many business markets with regional jets and trying to pick up those customers. And the examples he gave in the recent earnings call were, it was like New York to Atlanta, but obviously there's business on the West Coast too. And then that gets compounded by Alaska Airlines adding a whole bunch of flights out of and changing things around out of San Francisco now that they have the Virgin America gates and operations, and they can shift things around.
Hmm. So I'm wondering, what do you think? I mean, this is directly targeting Alaska, really. It's.
I think it has to be, at least in part. Some of it is clearly like they just need, you know, like the additional flights ones. Mm-hmm. A lot of those are business markets.
Yep.
Indianapolis, Kansas City, Nashville, Philadelphia. Those are business markets. I think it's interesting that, you know, Alaska said they're going to restore that Philadelphia service, and now United's upping its, you know, frequencies. There are a lot of them where they are. Albuquerque is another one. I think that was one of the ones that Alaska just announced it was going to put an E-75 out there. So United's throwing a second route with an E-75 now, or second frequency with the E-75 on that route. Like, there are a lot of these that are changing.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of it does seem tied to what's happening with Alaska for the San Francisco changes.
Yeah, so I wonder, and where I'm kind of, I don't know if this will affect fares. Like, I have my doubts this is really going to drop fares very much. Maybe a little bit. But like places like San Francisco, Philadelphia, Virgin America had that route for a while. Couldn't make it work. And then we talked about it on a show where now Alaska's bringing back San Francisco, Philadelphia. And now United is going to up their service. Is it overkill? Like, I mean, can Philadelphia, San Francisco be sustained?
It's a lot of capacity.
I mean, it seems like a lot. From nothing to now, I guess we're going to have basically four mainline aircraft a day flying that.
Is it four? Is Virgin only doing, or is Alaska only doing the one a day?
I believe it's one a day. Yeah, it's like, and then they're doing other flights from other West Coast hubs.
Okay, so yeah, but you know, still that goes, so it goes from two to four mainline on the day. That's doubling capacity. That's a lot of seats.
Yep. Yep. So this will be fun to watch and see, and maybe keep your eyes out for fare deals from, you know, the flight deal.
Yeah.
Who's been a guest on the show? I would say keep an eye on it if you're in one of these cities.
Yeah. I mean, the other interesting thing to me is, I mean, if you read through the rest of this release, that they call attention to some of the other routes that are coming on June 8th, and like Santa Rosa is adding, and even Fresno, like expecting a sale fare on Fresno, San Francisco service, or Santa Rosa, San Francisco service. Those are super short hops. Those are routes that are not designed to be sold for O&D traffic, for people flying between just those two cities.
Yep.
That service that's designed to provide onward connections to other long-haul routes or other cities in the region. And so, yes, definitely keep an eye out for some sale fares. But, you know, Sacramento, too. Sacramento, no one flies between. I can't imagine that many people fly between Sacramento and San Francisco. That seems like a terrible idea to me.
That would be an odd one. Yep.
Considering the frequency with which, A, those flights are delayed or canceled, and B, the ability to just make the drive unless you're connecting onward.
Yeah, and something that I you know, I'm just kind of thinking, I'm spitballing here, but I've brought this up with other people who ask me about Alaska Airlines, because I fly them now somewhat regularly because of where we're at. They are not the cheapest, usually not the cheapest carrier by far. And so I wonder what effect this
will
have.
Do you pay extra because you're loyal or because you like the experience?
So if Alaska's not the cheapest on the route that I need to go, I usually don't fly them. Or if they don't offer like a nonstop service, like if I have to go through Seattle and I can go through San Francisco and it's cheaper to go through San Francisco, I'll go through San Francisco. So I wonder.
So you aren't buying into the Alaska premium, is what you're saying?
Yeah, I don't really buy into. I think it's a weird false ceiling to me that they've kind of created, and I think West Coasters, especially Pacific Northwesterners, buy into that idea a little bit. And so there are
certainly
people,
those who aren't transplants, especially.
Yeah, I think there's people who live here who have flown Alaska for 30 years, and they'll purchase Alaska, even if they have to connect through Seattle or wherever. So I wonder what this will do to those fares. Like if this brings fares down on Alaska, then I'm happy, because that's great for me.
Sure. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I think some of the routes and some of the sort of flows could see mm-hmm. some routes adjust, but you know, it generally what we've seen is as capacity increases, fares decrease.
Yep.
And the airlines have faced that with the transatlantic market, and the U.S. carriers are mostly, you know, shedding routes and shedding capacity there because they can't compete with some of the low cost carriers on those routes at the right price point. And so where they can, they're sort of cutting back a little bit. And so I think a lot of that was moving back to domestic markets, where they're hoping that they can sort of somewhat surgically apply this capacity, put in individual routes and individual flights that they can add seats but not screw their yields. And it will be very interesting to see if they manage to pull that off.
Yeah, yeah, makes sense. Let's see here. What we got next? Oh, Spirit Airlines. There's a lot going on with Spirit.
Catch the spirit of Spirit Air. I don't even know if that was ever a slogan of theirs, but it feels like it should be.
they've had some A321 or A320 Neo engines.
320 Neos, yeah. They had their engines. And they had to park, like, a handful of them, which always sucks. But to overcome that, they actually chartered some planes, you know, from a random carrier, sort of wet lease or dry lease, I think, even, including the crews. I forget which is which. I always forget which is which. Wet lease includes the crew?
I think so, yes.
So wet lease with the pilots, but I think their own cabin crews are serving them. And so it's a damp lease. Anyway, they brought in these, like, spare airplanes to help figure it out. And supposedly the planes are getting fixed and they'll be back in service. But that was, like, step one in pissing off your pilots. Step two was there's some open contract negotiations on their collective bargaining agreement that have been going for a while now. And apparently the airline believes the pilots are staging a sick out illegally, calling in sick where they weren't supposed to. And then that resulted in a spike in flight cancellations, which not surprisingly pissed off a lot of passengers. And on Monday night, there were basically riots at the Fort Lauderdale airport as flights got canceled.
Yeah.
So, yep. Yay.
Yep. Like craziness. Just absolute craziness. And
yeah. So the videos from that are pretty ridiculous. There's a few out there at this point, but it's absolutely crazy. And what's funny to me is, I mean, I mentioned this when we started talking before we started recording, is this isn't the first time that flight cancellations in Fort Lauderdale have had the police called in to help restore order. It happened, I was looking up, I can find an example from 2013 where the Broward County police sheriff had to show up and help clear out some gate areas after flight cancellations and long delays. So it's apparently not all that uncommon that Southwest passengers get a little frustrated down there. I mean, obviously twice in 4 years is very uncommon. I'm not suggesting it's a disaster all the time, but it's one of those situations where when things go right, you at least get the Spirit experience and it is what it is. But when they go wrong, you've got a lot of opportunities for things to fall apart. And there's, you know, you have no backup. You have, oh, we'll get you on a flight in 3 days because that's when the next time we have seats. They don't work with other airlines. That can hurt.
Yeah, I find it. I mean, I'm reading this. There's a Yahoo Finance article, and the title, it's from the Associated Press, but the title says, "Union pilots say they'll help restore Spirit operations." And then I read the article, and there's not a whole lot in there that actually backs that up. So I don't know. I don't know what action the pilots are taking. I mean, they've been told by a judge, like, there was an injunction filed, or it was a temporary restraining order, sorry, against the union, the pilot union, ordering its members to not engage in any boycotts or slowdowns, saying it would violate federal law. And
those are always so weird to me because it's like, is you end up fighting this, is it a work to rule, which is the concept of the rules say I have to do X, Y, Z, you know, and we normally waive that rule or sort of edge around it. But if I'm working to the rules, can you really claim it? It's a slowdown. It's one of those things that, like, I feel like these deals always, well, I know for a fact at the end of the day, the passengers are the ones getting screwed. And it's a fight between labor and management. And I respect that they have, you know, all of them have their needs and their rights to, you know, behave and fight by the rules that are prescribed for them. But, the passenger is the ones that always get screwed, and that's what pisses me off. Like, having this fight in front of don't fight in front of the kids.
Yeah, I mean, and it sounds like some of these fights were happening amongst customers. So, like, customers were getting in fights with each other, and cops were having to break them up. Like, they weren't just yelling at the...
The riotish behavior was definitely all just passengers, like, mad that flights were canceled and going crazy.
That, just nuts, man. So, if you're flying Spirit...
Good luck.
We're sorry, and good luck.
You know, I have flown Spirit a couple times now. The first time, I wasn't quite ready for it. I wasn't in the mental state of being ready for it. The second time, I did it on purpose and, like, knew what I was getting into going into it. It wasn't good, but it really wasn't that bad.
I mean, it's tight in the back, right?
Yeah, especially the back. Like, the last few rows are even worse than the others. But, you know, sort of like what American's going to have on the 737 MAX coming up soon, right? I mean, they're cramming an extra couple rows in at 29 inches. It's... quite frankly, at this point especially, it's not all that different. Once you get on board, unfortunately.
Yep. I mean, it's besides operationally, I guess.
Yeah.
That's where the big differences come in, right? I mean, right now, at least.
Yes, absolutely. You know, when American has a system meltdown or when Delta has a system meltdown, or in theory, they can, once they have systems available again, they can put you on other airlines. Southwest can't and won't. So there's a lot of little things like that.
Yep. So just keep that in mind, folks. Electronics ban. So there's been some rumors, and I'll reiterate, they are rumors at this point. There has nothing been confirmed by the administration to say differently. But the rumors are that flights from Europe will have electronics banned, similar to what we are seeing with the ban of electronics out of the Middle East, you know, those six Middle East countries, right? What do you think? You think this is actually going to happen?
This is a tough one. The pragmatic me says there's just no way anyone's that stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This would be such a massive hit to service that I think the financial implications would be hard to comprehend and hard to quantify this without it actually happening. But I can't come up with an answer for other than it would be massive.
Well, and there's an article in The Economist, which we'll post in the show notes, about how there's two different ways this can go. It could go, we're banning electronics from Europe on specific carriers, namely European carriers, and U.S. carriers you can still use electronics on. And that would be a clear indication that this is not a terrorist threat, that this is directed to push business to U.S. companies, right? And then the other side of that is, yes, it's a ban on all electronics out of the EU into the United States. And like you said, it'll be a huge and massive undertaking for the airlines. And I don't even know if it's possible. Effectively possible.
I don't know. I don't know. It could be done.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, it's a ton of flights, but at some point, like, the airlines don't have a choice, and so they have to comply, and it can be done. Even, you know, in the Middle East, those three carriers, or, you know, nine, eight, there's a bunch of airlines affected, but the ME3 most aggressively reacted in terms of sort of trying to meet passenger needs. They've all come up with solutions very quickly. They're all very labor-intensive, which means expensive. And, you know, does that become a new surcharge on your ticket, like gate-checked laptop fee? I don't know. But it's kind of crazy.
I mean, the whole proposition just makes me kind of question how this would work. I mean, yeah, we can look at the Middle East carriers as examples for how they handle it. But, I mean, the scale, the sheer scale of this, I'm just thinking of, like, the arrival banks for Delta and United at, say, like, JFK and Newark, like, from Europe. That, I mean, you're talking some flights, you're going to get 20 flights in a matter of 3 hours, maybe? Like, handling all of that just seems like a complete nightmare. And I worry that it wouldn't be handled with as much professionalism, as the safe term I'll use, as they would be on a Middle East carrier. That's what I worry about.
Yeah, that's a completely fair concern.
Yeah, I mean, maybe carriers like Lufthansa or Swiss, or, you know, anyone else where your hub is in Europe and you have an outstation where you can control the experience would be better. But for a hub to carrier in the United States, I think it would just be, I just can't imagine. I can't imagine getting off a flight in, say, San Francisco and having to deal with handing out, you know, a 747's worth of laptops or tablets for that matter and figuring out who they go to.
Obviously they've managed to make it work. So there's a process for them, you know, you get a bag tag or whatever and they hand it out, but the whole thing is still ridiculous. And there's obviously the other safety implications of what happens when you put that many lithium ion batteries in a container in the hold where you can't quickly and easily maintain them. Manage them when a fire breaks out.
A thermal runaway in one lithium ion battery that's sitting next to another lithium ion battery is just a chain reaction waiting to happen.
Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't see an increase in necessarily safety from this. So, I think it's a terrible policy if it actually comes true. I'm hoping it doesn't. I've got a few flights to Europe coming up. I'm sure you do too.
Yeah.
I'm definitely not looking forward to having the possibility of checking my laptop, especially if it's like the week after the ban gets put into place. I'll probably just leave the laptop at home, honestly.
Well, my concern is I'll be in Europe
when it happens and you already have a laptop. Yeah.
Right. I mean, going back long enough, that happened with the liquid ban the first time.
Yeah. Then you just throw everything out, right?
Well, we actually had our scuba gear with us, so we had a checked bag anyways. But it was so confusing as to what counted and what didn't. Like, my wife's eyeliner or mascara counted. It was considered a liquid. And, like, that one got thrown away because you're dealing with someone in the Philippines who wasn't really keen on discussing things, and it's what it was. But, like, I don't know. It was a little crazy.
Yeah, I don't see this being any less crazy. I guess
my concern is I would be in a situation where there'd be too much confusion over what the rules really mean, and I can't plan and prepare.
Yep. Being able to prepare is one thing. I mean, I think like the ME3 carriers, they were pretty quick to figure something out, right? And but if you're flying within a day or two of this being implemented, there's certainly not going to be hard and fast rules at outstations, especially.
Yeah.
So yeah, keep an eye out. I'm sure we'll post things on the Twitter handle and on our own Twitter accounts when we know something more, but there's a couple of articles about it, and again, it's not confirmed. There's a lot of speculation going on, so just take that with an open mind and a grain of salt that these things are happening. So Sonair, let's talk about Sonair. A lot of people don't know who Sonair is. Sonair is the carrier of Angola. It is a carrier for the oil company.
Sort of a pseudo as a pseudo airline, though, yeah. Right? I mean, it's basically they don't operate anything themselves. It's, you know, arguably they're a booking service, but they run everything with charters run by other airlines, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it's Sun and Gall is the name of the company. It's an oil company out of Luanda and Angola, and they have another office in Houston. Yeah, so they run a what it's essentially a charter. It's pretty much a charter flight from Houston to Luanda, nonstop. And I believe that they used to do it semi-daily. Now I think it's like three or four times a week. And it's operated on an Atlas Air 747. And that's being opened up to the public now. It used to be you couldn't purchase this anywhere unless you were in one of the oil company employees and you had it.
It's charter service, so even as a scheduled service, basically the FAA or DOT, I forget who technically, one's part of the other, but you couldn't buy those if you wanted to. You had to be part of the company that was doing the charter.
Exactly. Yeah. And there were some people who were getting in on the sale, but it was as part of, like, they were
friend of a friend of someone who works there kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. But for the most part, it's oil people going to work in either the offshore rigs or in Angola or Nigeria or one of those locations. So it's being open to the public, which is a change. This actually used to be run, interestingly, by World Airways on I think it was an MD-11. Was it an MD-11?
Okay.
Or is it DC-10? I don't know. One of the two. And that fell through because there were reliability issues. And Sonnengal actually wanted Sonair wanted their own cabin crews. They wanted Angolan cabin crews to work the flights. And so that kind of changed up who ran the flights. And so Atlas Air provides the pilots, and Sonair provides the cabin crews. And so now you can buy these tickets, and they're not cheap. We actually had someone, a friend, post the ticket prices. Let me see if I can pull these up real quick.
I got it. Business Deluxe, $4,800 one way, $8,000 return. Business, $3,700 one way, $6,100 return.
Yeah, he didn't even post the coach prices. There are coach prices, but our friend doesn't fly coach. So
yeah, certainly not that far. Yeah, those are not cheap, but if you're looking for the nonstop line, that's an expensive price to pay for a line. That gets out of my league.
Even for us, yeah, I think it's a little expensive. It's not even like their regular business, the lower end business is actually like kind of like a premium economy product. It's not lie flat. And then their business deluxe is a lie flat product. You can, there's a couple of trip reports out there that you can see what the product looks like. Interesting stuff. I mean, there's a lot of history with the route, and I have to think.
Yeah, but would you want to stay in Luanda?
No. We were actually talking with a friend. There's some good fares between Luanda and Addis in Ethiopia. That would be cool.
Transit straight through.
Yeah, just transit straight through. Yeah, I definitely
sort of like the old Houston Lagos flight. If you're not going for the oil, transit straight through.
Yeah, I don't think I would want to stay in Angola for any extended amount of time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, do you think this means this is kind of a maybe you don't know what's that. It's an economics question that I ponder. I think this tends to point to the weakened oil markets in Western Africa right now, with oil prices where they are, and oil companies exploring other options.
Sure. I think that there definitely are challenges in the sort of somewhat sustained lower price of fuel right now that makes it hard to keep the exploration and drilling costs. Made hard to justify those and keep those fields running.
Yep.
Right. I mean, we saw the same thing with North Dakota and Canadian shale and all that, like sort of collapsing, and the aviation markets that supported them, namely United out of Houston, also collapsing. So,
I
it's no doubt to me that this, as the market gets weaker and weaker, like, oh crap, we need more bodies. Can we sell them to anybody? Okay, sure. I mean, good luck finding people who want to fly to Angola. To be fair, Houston has a very diverse population, and with well-timed or set-up connections or well-priced connections, they might be able to feed into the rest of Africa. But I'm not sure how well that's going to work versus the ME3 carriers or even the European carriers that provide those similar connections.
Yeah, I think even as the New York Times pointed out today, Houston's the most diverse city in the country. So there's a large Nigerian population in Houston. I'm pretty sure there's a large Angolan population in Houston. I'd be interested to see how it does. I think what you'll see, though, I think this has to do with Sonair having a contract with Atlas that probably has a termination date that's too well off in the future that they can't just they don't want to eat the cost of terminating the contract. And so they're like, okay.
Well, and they need I imagine they kind of need the service. So I think even if the market's weaker, it's not dead.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's basically a 2-day trip if you don't take this flight. Cause I think it's a red eye out of Luanda to Europe. And then basically waking, you get there in the morning and then you possibly sit around for a while, depending on where you're going.
And catch their westbound.
Yeah. Exactly.
Flight.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I did when I went to Ghana, basically took the red eye north to Brussels and then caught a late morning flight back to Philadelphia.
Yeah. So it's kind of I think like that's a time thing for the companies. Like I can send somebody the way this flight leaves at like 10 in the morning out of Houston. It lands in Luanda, I think early morning the next day. Okay. And so it's pretty well timed for people going to catch their helicopters and stuff to go offshore and things like that. So makes a lot of sense. So I don't see the service going away. They need to subsidize it somehow. Like they got to pay for it a little bit. I think they're struggling.
Will there be enough AvGeek dorks like us to make it happen? We shall see.
We shall see. You had an Air Force One story you wanted to share.
Yeah. Did you know that one of the two Air Force One planes was out of service?
No, I had no idea.
Between April 1st and 10th, at a Boeing plant located in Port San Antonio, Texas, three Boeing mechanics supplied and used contaminated tools, parts, components, a regulator, and an unauthorized cleaning procedure while performing oxygen system leak checks on the mishap aircraft, a VC-25A tail number 92-9000, assigned to the Presidential Airlift Squadron, Andrews Air Force Base, Maryland.
Hmm.
It turns out that they were servicing the oxygen system on the plane and used tools that were not cleaned appropriately for oxygen-related work and contaminated the whole thing.
Huh.
My favorite part about this story, quote, to date, the cost to remediate the known contamination of the oxygen system is over $4 million, which was paid for by Boeing. These three guys, three mechanics, it's also like reading this, it's I guess this is a Defense Department thing, but they have the Mishap Aircraft, Mishap Mechanic 1, Mishap Mechanic 2, and Mishap Mechanic 3, after which they are acronymed, so MM1 and MM2 and MM3. It's just, the whole thing is very fun and amusing to read for someone who doesn't normally deal with the sort of military style of writing. But yeah, these guys cost Boeing $4 million and took one of the 74s, one of the VC-25As, out of service for a while they fixed it.
That is fascinating.
Yeah.
And to be clear, Port of San Antonio is an actual place. It's Kelly. It's the old Kelly Field, which is an old Air Force base. So, yeah, interesting. Wow.
Yeah.
That sucks for those guys. You got to feel bad.
Yeah, I do. I also wonder, like, at what point did they realize they screwed up and try to get away with it?
And then someone said, nope.
Not yeah, Mishap watch. Mechanic 3 assisted Mishap Mechanic 2 in locating contaminated parts and components, then assisted MM2 by using the cleaning solution in an unauthorized procedure in an attempt to sanitize these parts, and then put it back in. So this wasn't just that they screwed up. It's after they screwed up, they tried to do something that was a non-documented fix to the system to see if they could get away with it.
Would you say it was a cover-up?
Even more stupidly hooked it up. Yeah, and then even more stupidly hooked it up to the rest of the plane, at which point the whole system becomes compromised, not just those parts. Right? Like, until you plug it back in, it's just replacing these components.
Yeah, they could have easily avoided all this by not putting them back in the plane and trying to play it off.
Yeah.
Wow.
$4 million-ish later.
Oopsie. Whoops. Yep.
Yeah, good times.
I think that's a pretty good show. I think we have one announcement that we announced at the beginning of the show that I'll let you take.
Okay. I didn't realize we were already here. That's so exciting. So I was on a Gogo test flight today. Gogo has a 737-500 called the Jimmy Ray, and it's named for one of their founders. It's their flying test bed. So they put all of their new hardware for commercial flights on it first before it ends up on your, you know, Delta or American or Alaska or whoever else airline. They've got a whole bunch of partners now. And today we were working with the newest of the 2KU hardware. So that's their newest new satellite system. It uses KU band antennas and satellites and stuff. And it's super fast, which is really nice, especially after you've spent too much time on their ATG product, which is the traditional Gogo system you're used to. It's not very super fast. But this, you know, the purpose of the flight was to show off they have a new modem that significantly increases capacity. And then they have, it also, the new modem supports the newest satellites that are flying.
Hmm.
And the newest satellites use basically what's called spot beams as opposed to broad beams. And if you just think about it from a capacity perspective, a traditional broad beam could cover like all of, you know, North America with X amount of spectrum. And then everybody's connecting to that same beam, so everybody gets a tiny slice of that. If you take that same amount of spectrum and then, you know, if you imagine like sort of the four color map problem, right? Yeah. You put a bunch of little dots, and as long as it doesn't, you know, as long as the two dots don't touch each other, they can reuse the same frequency mm-hmm. over and over again. So from the same allocation of what is a very limited resource, you can get way more capacity. And so these spot beams are a huge improvement for the technology overall, but it turns out that it means passengers are going to get faster connections. And to support spot beams, new modem was required. So we now have the new modems installed on this test bed, and the first of these new HTS, high throughput satellite or spot beam satellites, is flying and has been in service since the beginning of the year. And so it sort of all comes together, beginning of this year, maybe the beginning of last year. I can't believe I screwed that up. But it all comes together in the form of, it was really fast. And it was nice to see that sort of thing happening. And they took us up to fly around. And so it was a joyride. We did about an hour and a half out of Newark this afternoon, flew north up over to Vermont, turned around and came back.
Nice. How did it work?
Really fast.
That's good, right?
Yeah, it was really, really fast. 2019, it launched a year ago. God, it's been so long. It launched in January 2016. So the satellite's been up for a little while now, but none of the planes flying could take advantage of these new features. And so we're finally starting to see that happening. For the Gogo 2KU planes, they're saying Q3 for this modem to be in commercial service. And Panasonic is doing a similar upgrade to its modems, which you'll see on the Gogo stuff is on Delta long haul, Even though it's not 2KU, the new modems will let the legacy KU use the faster satellite connections. The 2KU stuff is on a bunch of 737s and some of the Airbus narrowbodies as well, and is rapidly expanding through the rest of the fleet. I think Delta's expected to have something like 600 or 800 planes with 2KU by the end of like mid 2019 or so. Super fast rollout. I mean, for anything that happens with an airline, 2 years to get the full fleet done is pretty fast, in my opinion. Especially when this involves bolting a couple hundred pounds of satellite antenna hardware on the roof. So it's coming is the short answer. You know, this is obviously a very much a iterative thing where these parts will get better and then they'll have to buy more capacity and launch new satellites and all these other things to keep growing. But in my take, it's good news. It's good news that this is coming along. Even better news for our listeners is that as I was walking off the plane, one of the guys from GoGo handed me a stack of coupon cards for GoGo sessions.
Oh, nice.
So I have a stack of cards to give away. So if people want a GoGo code, mention Dots Lines on Twitter or leave us a comment on the blog post, I guess. Twitter's probably easier because I check that more often. But either way, I have a bunch. Some people will get them. Not everybody will, depending on how many people ask. But if you're flying GoGo anytime soon and want a code, give a holler and we might be able to hook you up.
Awesome. Awesome. Thanks, Seth.
Thanks, GoGo.
I think that's our show for this week. You can find us on Twitter at DotsLines, moredotsmorelines.com. Leave us a comment, leave us a review on iTunes. We'd love to hear from you. We also have a Patreon account, which you can find linked on the website. So thanks for listening. Happy flying. Bye.
Take care.